for inviting me and to, for giving me a chance to talk about my work. I will, in fact, talk about the world line formalism, and in particular about some new work that's been done in the subject. I will start, and well, mainly what I will be talking about is based on this work here, done by these people that are, in a way or another, they have passed through Bologna. And, well, so after a short introduction, I will go straight into the into the method. I will try to explain the word line formalism through a very simple case, probably the simplest one. That's the scalar contribution to quantum electrodynamics. That is to say, that scalar contributions to photon amplitudes, and the way it is obtained through the one-dimensional path integral, through the path integral in the one-dimensional space. So in this case, the path integral will be a path integral in flat space. It is then natural to extend the subject here to include external gravity. That is, instead of computing the contribution of scalar field or other fields, in fact, to n point function, to n photon amplitudes, it is also natural to consider the contribution of such a field to n graviton amplitudes. In particular, this method is extremely effective if one considers the one loop effective action. The generalization to curved space, it's a priori straightforward, but in fact it involves a few issues that are related to the ultraviolet regularization that such path integral needs. Although it is a one-dimensional model, it's quantum mechanics, but there are some Feynman diagrams that are superficially divergent. At the end of the day, of course, the whole thing is finite, but separately one needs to deal with such a divergent diagrams. Also, there are other issues related to zero modes that have been taken care of. From there, one can extend then the word line formalism in curved space, extend considering other fields running into the loops, such as spin rank field, and which corresponds in the path integral language to spinning particle with n equal to 1 supersymmetry in the word line, and spin 1 field that corresponds to n equal to 2 spinning particle, for both of these models it's been shown that one can couple them in fact to external gravity and obtain a correct result for the graviton amplitudes. The last part is the newest result that concerns a further extension, which includes extended n greater than 2 spinning particle with local supersymmetry, which correspond, at least correspond in 4 dimension, to spin n half fields. We have succeeded in obtaining the one-loop quantization in flat space, so with no gravity coupled, and obtained the correct number of degrees of freedom for the matrix model technique, that's the orthogonal polynomial method, and we are ready now to try at least to couple it to background fields. Also, if time allows, I will also tell you something about another application of the word line formalism that we obtained recently, implementing the method of the image charge into the path integral. Then, so what is it, the word line formalism? The word line formalism is a method to obtain some quantum field theory results, some amplitudes, without having to rely on the propagator that come from space-time actions, but rather one obtains these results directly from quantum mechanical path integrals. So there is no such things as momentum integrals or Dirac traces, since the Dirac traces are provided by the fermionic degrees of freedom in the word line. So as such, it is an alternative way to compute some correlation functions, and is also an effective tool to compute anomalies for chiral anomalies and conformal anomalies. This has been used to a great extent by Alvarez, Comeo, and Witten in the 80s. So, as I was saying, the simplest, one of the simplest models that one can think about is the scalar contribution to quantum electrodynamics at one loop. So I can start from an action that involves complex scalar fields and an external vector field A mu, and I compute from that action an effect, the one loop effective action that is nothing but formally the determinant to the minus one of this differential operator. It is always like that, but in this particular case, since the action is quadratic, the effective action is one loop exact. So this effective action gamma is the generating function of one particle irreducible correlators, which is basically, so it's basically the sum of amplitudes of this form with these wiggly lines representing external photons. So one can start from the formal expression of the one-loop effective action, exponentiate this logarithm by means of the Schwinger parameterization, and recognize that the exponent, a differential operator that is like it's Schrödinger-like operator. So one can use a fictitious Hilbert space to compute this trace here, in particular a fictitious quantum mechanical coordinate x with periodic boundary conditions. So one computes this trace using the path integral with x having periodic boundary conditions in order to give rise to a trace. So in this object here we have our field, our quantum field is this field x that are coordinates in this fictitious space, and external field given by the vector potential. So one can carry on this, for instance, this effective action as an expansion in inverse mass squared, or one can obtain directly the n photon amplitude by considering the following expansion. So if one writes the vector potential as a sum of different plane waves of different external photons that have polarization epsilon I, and then sticks this into the path integral, and then from the expansion of the exponent one picks out all the terms that are linear, actually multilinear, in the polarization vectors. So this gives a correlator in the quantum mechanical path integral. So now, once again, the fields are this x of tau here. So using quantum mechanical propagators, one obtains the Bernd-Cosover-Master form. That's nothing but the following expression. So the n photon amplitude is given by the following expression, where one has, of course, the conservation of total momentum, and has such an exponent that has to be understood as the one takes the expansion of this exponential and picks out all the linear terms in all the polarization tensors. Here there is also an integral over the modulus of the modulus of the circle. Remember that we have a periodic boundary condition for the path integral. So we have to integrate over the modulus and take care also of the volume of the Killing group. That's nothing but the length of t. Also, this 4 pi t to the power d half is the one-loop determinant. So it's a semi-classical path integral, free path integral. So far, so good. As far as the flat space is concerned, one may then try to extend such a formalism, including external gravity. And in particular, one can do so with a simple model, including a real scalar field, coupled, non-minimally coupled to gravity in this way, and once again, produce an effective action of this sort, which is now the sum of n graviton amplitudes, which this effective action now can be once again represented with the Schwinger parametrization, and now one has a path integral in variable x with this action here, which is now a non-linear sigma model, whereas before, in the case of QED, it was a linear sigma model with that was coupled to external photon. One can obtain this very action here directly from first quantization.
What is that parameter C here?
Oh, it's just a constant.
It's
coupling that we consider a non-minimal coupling.
Yeah, that coupling.
So one can obtain this effective action directly from first quantization, starting from a relativistic point particle action, which include, besides the coordinate x mu, also an Einbein field. So the action is invariant under diffeomorphism in the word line. Diffeomorphism, of course, the field, the Wilbein E, is non-dynamical. Of course, it's just a gauge field and can be gauged away. The diffeomorphism can be gauged away up to a modulus. That's the length, basically, of the torus, of the one-dimensional torus. And one also has to take care of the length of the circle itself and divide it out so that you can reach the effective action that I showed in the previous transparency. So as I said, a priori, the generalization from flat space to curved space is straightforward. In reality, there are a few issues that concerns the ultraviolet regularization of the nonlinear sigma model, and in particular, in order to deal with these problems, a few regularization schemes have been studied in the past. Some of them by myself and other people. And what we found is that dimensional regularization, as far as these perturbative calculations are concerned, is the most effective one, since it allows only for non-covariant counterterms, for covariant counterterms, whereas the other two regularization schemes need, on top of this very same counterterm, other counterterms that are non-covariant with respect to the space-time diffeomorphism. Also, there's a problem related to factorization of zero modes, because when one does perturbation theory in these models, one expands about the flat space again, and there's the free kinetic operator has a zero mode. And the way one projects out the zero mode from the path integral, there are several different equivalent ways, which anyway carry non-covariant total derivatives. And we've been able to show that one is able to treat this problem using BRST techniques. So, but including the DR, dimensional regularization counterterm, the action for the word line formalism looks like so, where instead of psi, now we have psi bar, which includes the dimensional regularization counterterm. And also, I have included here some fermionic ghosts and bosonic ghosts that will take care of the formally Einstein invariant measure in the path integral. So, as in the very same way as in the
I don't know whether others understood, but I certainly didn't understand that last statement.
that action there is Poincaré invariant action.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, here we are in curved space, so we would like to have an action that is. Which is formally invariant under diffeomorphism. So, in order to reproduce that object there, this object here is reproduced using those ghost spins. In the very same way, it's like a Philip Popov trick. So you exponentiate the Philip Popov determinant using ghosts. This is fermionic,
mm-hmm.
So you get something that goes like the determinant of G. This is bosonic, so it gives you 1 over square root of G.
Oh, I see. Okay, no, all right.
So we have, and now the measure here is Poincaré invariant. So we can use the Feynman rules that follow with from that action expanding. The graviton about flat space, the metric tensor about flat space, and substitute that object into the metric tensor here and into the Ricci scalar, and then once again we pick up all the terms which are linear in the different polarization of the n external gravitons. So similarly to the flat case, we obtain an n-graviton amplitude directing momentum space from the correlation function of these vertex operators. For instance, if you want to calculate 2-graviton amplitude, this is the sum of 2 contributions. One, which is given by proportional to psi bar, that's given in terms of quadratic vertex, and the other term that is given to from the square of 2 linear vertex in gravitons. So for instance, the first one, that is the case when psi bar is equal to 0, and this one picks out the quadratic part in h mu nu in the graviton perturbation, and so one has 2 vertex operators, and I'm supposed to pick up the in this product here, the linear part in the 2 polarization tensors. And then H, that is the quantum field, is split into a zero mode and a non-zero mode part. The zero mode part takes care, if you pick out here the linear part in epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, integral over x naught of, so extracting from there the exponent in x naught is nothing but some phi dot x naught that gives the conservation of the total momentum. Whereas the non-zero mode part will give non-trivial contribution, in particular the using the weak contraction, we obtain the following result for the 2-point function, which is an integral over the modulus of the circle times this expression here, which involve kinetic invariants, which are again bilinear in the 2 polarization tensors. This is simply it's a base of tensors which are symmetric in mu nu and symmetric under the exchange of the 2. Of the pair of indices mu nu and alpha beta, and these are the diagrams that are involved in the word line computation.
I guess I don't know what those large dot notation.
Right. Sorry, you're right. So delta is the propagator in the word line. So it has 2 variables, theta, and here are given by in terms of theta and sigma. So delta depends on tau and sigma, and the dots are derivative with respect to tau if the dot sits on the left,
okay.
And derivative with respect to sigma if it sits on the right.
Mm-hmm.
So one can use dimensional regularization now when necessary to compute these integrals here and use translation invariance to fix sigma equal to 0. So one finally obtains these expressions for those integrals. and then the proper integral, the final result can be carried out at complex D. So one, of course, these are terms in the effective action, so they are divergent, and one can use space-time dimensional regularization to obtain the divergent part and the finite part of this expression. In particular, here we have this first contribution here in terms of these two tensor R1 minus R2, that is nothing but the quadratic contribution to the cosmological constant that comes from this amplitude. The rest is the self energy correction to the graviton propagator, and in fact all these tensors S here are transverse. So, as I was saying, there's an additional term that comes from the quadratic vertex operator that comes is proportional to psi bar and gives the following expression. So we tested that the one point function and the two point function do satisfy the word identity from general coordinate invariants. So that this means that the regularization that we have implemented into the path integral is a correct implementation. So one can use now generalize the results that have talked about so far, including other different particles into the loop. In particular, it's quite straightforward to extend it to a spin 1 particle by considering just an n equal to 1 supersymmetric version of the word line that I've shown before. And in this case, there are no issues related to this expansion, since the n equal to 1 supersymmetry is global here. Actually, one can start with the local supersymmetry, but it can be completely gauged away. And there are also other similar ghosts to those Fedor Popov ghosts that I showed before for the fermion. And one can again use dimensional regularization to compute the effective action and the graviton amplitudes. So the action now looks like so. We have the bosonic part and a fermionic part. And there are only, in this case, vertices that are linear in the graviton. So it's much simpler computation in this case. It can be further extended to include spin 1 particle into the loop. And in this case, one has n equal to 1 local supersymmetry in the path integral. And besides, there is also a gauge symmetry that in this case it's an abelian gauge symmetry that yields a new constraint. And on top of that, one can introduce a Stern-Simon coupling in such a way that can the new constraint can project in form fields. So in general, the field that runs into the loop is a form field, which vector potential is a p-form field, which has this expression in terms of the dimension of the Stern-Simons coupling that must be integer. So in particular, for d equals to 4 and q equal to 0, when it has p equal to 1, that means that the particle that runs into the loop is a vector field. If q were equal to 1, one would have once again a scalar field, so a zero form. Also, it's been tested that one can couple to external gravity these models and obtain in the very same way graviton amplitudes as I showed before. It is also possible to implement these models to include massive particles into the loop by using a technique that's basically a Kaluza-Klein reduction. So one starts from, say, five-dimensional model and sets the five-dimensional momentum equal to m, basically. So this the Klein-Gordon constraints now, instead of giving p squared equal to 0, gives p squared equal to m squared, and then projects in a massive spin particle instead of a massless one. Now, this is what I'm going to talk about now, is the newest result that we have obtained with these spinning particles models, considering the n greater than one local symmetry, local supersymmetry extension. In particular, it's been shown, it's known for a long time, that if one considers a spinning particle model with S1 gauge symmetry, one obtains, as in the canonical quantization, one obtains constraints that yield the Barman-Wigner equations of motion. So in four dimensions, that means that one, the physical degrees of freedom are those of a spin n half field. So in particular, for n equals to 4, one has a graviton, and for n equals to 3, one has a gravitino. And in generic D, the one does not have, of course, spin and half fields, but rather the physical degrees of freedom are those of a massless representation of the conformal group, SO2, D, as shown by Siegel. So in this case, the starting point is once again the action, the free action in phase space of a spinning particle, which includes the phase space part and the Hamiltonian and the phase space part in terms of the fermions. So one has symmetry algebra in terms of the Hamiltonian, in terms of charge of supersymmetry charges, and in terms of SON generators that are given by this expression. So one can either take the model as it stands, or even gauge the fields. So one can reach, instead of this globally supersymmetric action, one can use a local supersymmetric action. Passing from this means that one has to add gauge fields to the action, supergravity, one-dimensional supergravity fields that are namely a ninebind, as in the case of the scalar word line. One has n gravitino, u sky I, and also SON gauge fields. So the Lagrangian now looks like so. One has to include, implement the supersymmetry, the supercharge here by this gravitino and this SON symmetry generators by the gauge fields. So from canonical quantization, this model here can be shown to, it was shown a long time ago, actually almost 20 years ago by these guys, the fermionic degrees of freedom can be, to quantum level, one passes from anti-commutative variables to a set of Clifford algebra, where here the commutator has to be understood as a graded commutator. So the wave function is a multi-spinner in these spinner coordinates alpha 1, alpha n. So each one of these matrices here acts on a space which is labeled here by different indices alpha 1, alpha n. And once again, one applies in the canonical quantization the constraints directly on the multi-spinner. So from the Hamiltonian constraints, one gets the Klein-Gordon equation. So that means that this multi-spinner here satisfies the Klein-Gordon equation. On top of that, there are Suzy constraints, which lead to Dirac equation in all the indices alpha I. And there are vector constraints coming from the SON gauge fields that select the different physical propagating degrees of freedom of this model. So the constraint is given in the classical theory by this expression, and in the quantum theory, since these fermions here represented by gamma matrices is given by the following expression. One can project now this expression here on a set of on a base for the Clifford algebra, and then obtains such an expression in terms of of these gamma matrices, where gamma can be any one of the matrices in this set here. So there's an identity which relates this expression in the case where when there are n vector indices, and this identity immediately implies that when n, when the number of vector indices in the gamma matrix is equal to d half, the constraint acts trivially. So in particular, if one considers d equal to 4 and n equal to 3, one has the trivial constraints is the subject here with two vector indices in the gamma matrix. So that means that basically one can write down the multi-spinner in terms of the two indices gamma matrices in this way. And since this object is anti-symmetric in the vector index, the wave function must be as well anti-symmetric. And then applying the non-trivial constraints, so the one that differs, that have different number of indices, vector indices in the gamma matrix, one obtains the following expression. So this two form here is closed and closed, so one can integrate it locally at least and write it in terms of the one form phi, whereas the Dirac equations and gamma trace equation allows to write the this expression here in terms of Rarita-Schwinger equation. So that means that the propagating the physical degrees of degree of freedom are those of a spin 3 half field, as such a field satisfies the Rarita-Schwinger equation. Similarly, for n equals to 4, one has the propagating degrees of freedom are those of a spin 2 field. So this was done using canonical quantization. What we have done is we have implemented this model into the path integral. So once again, one starts from the free field action, but in a configuration space for simplicity. So one has the following action, where here I have integrated out the momenta from the phase space action that I had before. And then what we need to find at the end of the day is the correct integration measure for the path integral. In order to do that, we need to gauge fix all the gauge fields and to write down a measure that is basically a product of Fedev-Popov determinants in terms of the moduli fields. So the Gray's transformations, in order to achieve this Fedev-Popov determinant, one considers the gauge transformation of the supergravity multiplet here, which is given by the following expression, and where all the bosonic fields are taken with periodic boundary conditions and the fermionic fields are taken with antiperiodic boundary conditions. So the object we would like to compute is the following, where we integrate over the space over the fields. Capital X here represent both X and fermionic fields psi, and also over the gauge over the supergravity fields, but dividing out the volume of the gauge group with this prescription for the boundary condition that it has to be periodic for boson and antiperiodic for fermions in order to compute a trace of the differential operator. So in order to gauge fix this local symmetry, we can be shown that the Einbein can be gauge fixed up to a constant beta, where beta is indeed the modulus of the circle, what before I had indicated with capital T. Whereas the Gravitino chi can be gauge fixed completely, since the gauge parameter psi does not have any zero mode, since of antiperiodic boundary conditions. What I'm left with is the gauge fixing of the SON gauge fields. Can be shown that can be gauge fixed to a constant matrix with which has basically it's a combination of operator in the Cartan subgroup of the group SON. So it's it depends on a set of parameters theta that where k run from 1 to r, when r is the rank of the SON group. So the what we would like to obtain is obtain the correct path integral, the correct measure from this gauge fixing here using the Fedyukov trick. So in particular, we obtain the effective action, which includes, as in the in bosonic case, an integral over the modulus of the circle, an integral over the zero mode, and there is also now an integral over the over the moduli of the SON gauge field. And this part, these two determinants are, in fact, the Fedyukov determinant. This is the Fedyukov determinant for the gauge fixing of supersymmetry, along with a determinant that comes from the fermion themselves that are coupled to the vector, are coupled in, are in the vector representation of the gauge group. And there's also a term that comes from the gauge of from gauge fixing the SON gauge fields themselves. In fact, this determinant is, includes fields in the adjoint representation with periodic boundary conditions. So, since this initial part here is the is included also in the is what is included in the bosonic path integral, what is what remains is just the number of degrees of freedom, because this is. It's, and it, this object here is simply equal to 1 for n equal to 0, so when there is no supersymmetry in the model. So as I said, the SON gauge fields can be gauge fixed to a constant matrix of this form, where this in this form one has diagonalized the Cartan subalgebra in such a way that each say matrix on the Cartan subalgebra has the following form, and zero everywhere, but H1 has the non-zero values in the second block. So it is block diagonal. And thetas, these variables here are angles, since the large using large gauge transformation, one can show that the theta is equivalent to theta I plus 2 pi n. Also, there are again constant constant gauge transformation that might transform this matrix alpha hat here into itself up to discrete symmetries. In particular, this means that there are the fundamental domain, which is since those one starts from this domain here, which is the basically implied by this equivalence, and it one has to reduce to a fundamental domain, since there are discrete symmetries into the path integral. In particular, there are permutations of the different thetas of that gauge choice, and there are also Z2 symmetries that are allowed on the ON gauge symmetry. For the SON, one has to divide by 2 the number of Z2 symmetries that are allowed. So in particular, these are constant gauge transformations that switch the sign to the to a pair of angles theta, and then one can then proceed to compute the determinant those two determinants that were involved in the Fedyukov in the measure, and for the periodic boundary conditions one obtains this should be anti-periodic boundary conditions sorry obtains the following following expression, whereas for the periodic boundary conditions in the adjoint representation one has such a determinant.
The prime is no zero mode?
Yeah, right. That's correct. Sorry. And then putting all together, one has the following expression for the number of degrees of freedom in generic n and for in generic dimension, and which can be one can immediately see that for all dimensions there are no propagating degrees of freedom as such an object is odd under theta that goes into theta minus into 2 pi minus theta. And in fact, in the case of n equals to 2, there were propagating degrees of freedom into these models because one could add a Chern-Simons term. Since here we have non-abelian symmetry, we cannot implement Chern-Simons, and then the odd-dimensional models are empty. So performing a change of variables of the sort one can obtain for even-dimensional models, the following expression for the number of degrees of freedom. So there is, a multi-integral in terms of these variables xk, which involves a prefactor and a determinant, that's the so-called van der Mond determinant that always appears in matrix models. This van der Mond determinant here, let's say,
can be obtained the following.
Where upper indices are powers. And then, starting from that expression, one can, using simple linear algebra, one can show that that very same determinant can be written using polynomials, generic monic polynomials, so using the combination of different rows, and these polynomials are arbitrary, meaning that their coefficients are arbitrary. The only constraint is that they must be monic, meaning that the coefficient in front of the highest power of x must be equal to 1. So the square of the van der Mond determinant can be written in this way. So as a determinant of a kernel, that's the product of these two determinants. And then each element of the kernel is the row times the column of the second matrix, so it's given by the sum of these products. And then this is so far is true for any polynomials. Only monic polynomials. One can be smart though and use orthogonal polynomials with respect to the prefactor that has here. Luckily enough, the prefactor here is known. The polynomials that are orthogonal with respect to the prefactor here are known polynomials. They are so-called Jacobi polynomials. So that one can integrate all these variables here and reach the following expression. So basically, this multi-integral here is nothing but the product of the norm of these polynomials under this integration, under this normalization. In particular, one can write down explicitly the result for the number of degrees of freedom, which is the following for D dimension, for 2D dimensions, and 2R supersymmetries. And in a similar way, one can obtain the odd dimensional number of degrees of freedom. So in particular, it is interesting to single out a few special cases, which are those that belong to the dimension capital D equals to 2, so small d equal to 1, which gives only 1 degree of freedom for any n. So for all number of Suzy, one has only 1 degree of freedom for the 2-dimensional model. So either it's a fermion or it's a boson. It's a fermion when one has an odd number of supersymmetry. And it's a boson when one deals with an even number of supersymmetries. And in the same way for dimension d equals to 4, for which one has a gravitino for an odd dimensional supersymmetry and the graviton for an even dimensional supersymmetry. So, in conclusion, what we have done, we have obtained the correct path integral measure for such a spinning particles, for such SON spinning particle for generic N and generic dimension. And such models that propagate into the loop higher spin fields in four dimensions, whereas, as I said, in generic dimension they propagate conformal particles. What we plan to do now is to consider the coupling of such a model to external gravity. It is not a trivial issue, since these models seem not to be couplable to a generic curved background, but rather it seems that as far as SON spinning particles are concerned, one can only couple them to constant curvature backgrounds, such as anti de Sitter or de Sitter, or as in the trivial case, the flat space. One can try to deal with more general couplings, so instead of considering SON spinning particle, consider more generic symmetry groups, such as those considered by Hallowell and Waldron, that are people from the math department here in Davis, in fact. So, yeah, I think I'll stop here because I do not have enough time to cover the other part.
Did you say a little more about the point about the problems in coupling between non-symmetric backgrounds?
Yes, sure. It's very simple, because if you consider the algebra that I showed before, there's an extended.
You have QI supersymmetry generators with I that goes from 1 to n. You have H, that's the Hamiltonian. So what happens if you consider curved space that you cannot covariantize the algebra? So in particular, you're not able to close the algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for the case of constant curvature, when you take the anti-commutator of QI and QJ, you have a term that is proportional to the Hamiltonian, and some other stuff that depends on the SON generator. And this is possible only if you have a constant curvature. And in particular, if lambda is equal to zero, lambda is cosmological constant now. If lambda is equal to zero, you have the flat space algebra. So that's why it seems that it's tricky to extend it to non-trivial backgrounds. But perhaps using these more general symmetry groups, or different models, this can be done. But we have no idea yet.